This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Legacy of the Fallen, Ascend Online, Book 3. Written by Luke Chimlenko. Performed by Luke Daniels. Chapter 1. Friday, March 8th, 2047, 5:23 a.m. Far southeast of Aldford. A pair of moons hung high in the western sky, locked in an eternal chase with one another as they sped through the void. The first moon was large and ponderous as it crossed the firmament, casting a bright crimson light everywhere it glanced, making it appear as if the night itself were on fire. Far ahead of its crimson mate, a much smaller and nimble orb sped through the starry night, its pale azure hue much too weak to challenge the glow of its larger sibling. Perched on the far edge of the northwestern horizon, the azure moon began its descent as the dawn of a new day broke to the east.
"Charge!"
My hoarse voice barked out as I sprinted through the morning twilight, kicking up a spray of dew behind me. The sound of thundering feet echoed in my ears, drowning out the crash of the battle before me. A surge of magic sliced through the air, brutally ravaging the bandits' rear ranks, causing them to turn at the unexpected assault. I saw a wave of terror ripple through their line as they spotted us charging out of the night, desperately scrambling to meet our attack. They were far too slow. Our vanguard slammed into the panicking horde, overrunning and trampling all in their path as they forced their way towards the front of the battle. In their wake, they left chaos and confusion as shell-shocked bandits picked themselves off the ground, wondering what force of nature had just run them over. Then our second line arrived. I slammed into a gray-armored bandit, knocking the rising half-elf back to the ground, plunging razor deep into the fallen adventurer's back. Barely breaking my stride, I leaped over the body with a single thought dominating my mind as I forced myself deeper into the chaos. "I hope we're not too late." A heartbeat later, my sprint carried me through the bandit's shattered battle line, the few survivors of our surprise attack fighting fiercely in rapidly shrinking pockets. I carefully picked my way through the bodies littering the ground under my feet as I ran deeper into the chaos. I saw the bodies of uniformed guards lying beside others that could have only been settlers, both caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, but neither hesitating to give up their lives as they stood up to the bandit's sudden raid. Running hard, I worked to regain my lost speed, tearing my attention from the fallen and instead fixating on an overturned wagon ahead of me. With a quick gesture of my hand, I triggered a spell, immediately feeling lighter on my feet. A gentle hop easily took me to the top of the capsized wagon, and then a powerful leap sent me high into the sky. Acrid smoke and a wash of heat greeted me as I surveyed the battlefield from above, my augmented vision cutting through the twilight, allowing my eyes to drink in every detail as I momentarily hung free from gravity's grasp. Chaos reigned everywhere I looked, with more than half of the bandits still unaware of our arrival. I saw dozens of wagons, carts, and carriages spread out below me, some having circled next to one another for protection against the bandits' attack. Draft animals wailed with terror as flashes of magic illuminated the morning's dawn, the constant thunderclaps of concussive spells doing little to drown out their sounds. "Damn!" I spotted a pair of bloody defenders collapse as a group of six bandits overwhelmed them, opening a clear path to a cowering mass of travelers huddled next to a heavily laden cart. As the other bandits bent down to loot the fallen defenders, I saw one marauder dart forward, moving directly towards the now panicking travelers. My cloak billowed out around me as gravity finally began to pull me back down.
"Here we go!"
I tightened my grip on Razor, focusing on the over-eager bandit and triggered Blinkstep. The world blurred for the briefest of instants before I landed on the bandit's back, chopping Razor deep into his shoulder as I rode him to the ground. Chancing a quick glance upward, I saw the eyes of the cringing travelers widen in surprise at my arrival. Gritting my teeth, I tore my blade out of the stunned marauder and thrust it viciously into the back of his neck, feeling his body go limp under me. Standing up slowly, I turned to face the other bandits that lagged behind their late friend.
"Two humans. Possibly scouts or rogues, plus an elf that looks like a mage."
I dispassionately analyzed the attackers as they gaped at my sudden appearance. The half-orc might be a shaman, and that dwarf is almost definitely a warrior.
What the hell?
One of the human bandits shouted, his eyes flicking to his comrade's fallen form.
Where the fuck did he just come from? Well, look at that, boys. Someone else wants to play hero.
The dwarven warrior laughed derisively as he motioned his companions forward.
Let's show him what the gray devils do to heroes.
Careful, Phil. He doesn't look right.
The second human bandit called out cautiously.
There's something going on.
That's all anyone sees now, I thought as I offered the bandits a bitter smile, having seen the same reaction countless times over the last few weeks. A gaunt, scarred man with skin far too tight for his bones. With a burst of cold anger, I leaped forward, covering the short distance between me and the dwarven bandit in the blink of an eye. Caught completely flat-footed, the overconfident dwarf had let his shield arm droop and was still bringing up his axe when I stabbed a crackling razor into the meat of his arm, discharging a shocking touch into his body. The dwarf yelped in pain, his axe falling from his spasming hand. Twisting my blade, blood sprayed all over the dwarf's powdery gray leather armor as I pirouetted to the side, evading a reflexive swipe from his shield. Completing my spin, I shifted ever so slightly to let a gleaming short sword pass by my hip harmlessly, finding myself staring into the eyes of one of the human bandits. His eyes flared with horror when my free hand grabbed his outstretched wrist and yanked him forward, right into Razor's path. The battle-worn sword viciously chopped into the base of the bandit's unarmored neck. Fueled by adrenaline and the need for speed, I ruthlessly sawed the blade into the bandit's flesh before tearing it free, causing a gout of blood to erupt from the massive wound. Pulling even harder on the now screaming bandit's arm for a second time, I hauled him completely off balance and sent him staggering into the dwarven bandit behind me.
Damn it, Welton! Get it together!
I heard the dwarf yell in anger before realizing the extent of his friend's injury.
Oh, shit! Orson! Welton needs heals before he bleeds out!
As if I'm gonna let that happen, I thought with a shake of my head, my anger feeling slightly sated. What do they take me for? An amateur? Not waiting to lose the initiative, I dug in my heels and sprinted towards the elf, managing to cover three long strides before the still-standing human bandit moved to intercept me. I could see a hesitant expression on his face as he braced himself to receive my charge, having already seen me brutally wound one of his companions. As I ran, the elf confirmed my suspicions, identifying himself as a mage and beginning to conjure a ball of fire in his hands.
Rylan, box him in!
I heard the dwarf call out from behind me.
Let Penn wear him down at range!
Quickly glancing over my shoulder, I saw that the dwarf had begun charging after me, intent on bowling me over from behind, leaving the half-orc all by himself as he urgently tended to the fallen bandit. I mentally sighed, almost feeling sorry for what I was about to do. It wasn't my fault that this group didn't know the single and most important rule for player versus player combat. Never abandon your healer. A stride before I crashed into Rylan, I planted my foot, bringing myself to a stop. Caught off guard by my unexpected move, Rylan watched me with a stunned expression on his face as I whirled away, focusing my attention on the distant healer, and triggered Blinkstep. Once again, my world blurred as I teleported a short distance, appearing directly behind the half-orc shaman, who had knelt down to heal his fallen comrade. With no regards to the fairness of the act, I lunged forward and drove Razor straight through the half-orc's back, piercing through the worn leather armor with ease. I felt the shaman gasp as he looked down to see my blade protruding from his chest, his magic chant dying on his lips. Pulling myself close to him, I didn't wait to see if my opening blow would be enough to put him down for good. I spoke a word of power, causing a dagger made of fire to appear in my hand. Leaving Razor buried inside the shaman, I let go of the hilt and grabbed a fistful of the shaman's hair, pulling his head backward sharply. I allowed myself a moment of showmanship, spinning the dagger in my hand before I caught it by the hilt and brutally thrust it into the shaman's exposed throat, feeling it vanish the moment my attack was complete. The half-orc went limp in my grip. And that's why you don't leave your healer alone. I shoved the dead man forward, the body falling heavily on top of the still bleeding Welton. Reaching forward, I grabbed the hilt of razor and pulled it free, the smell of burning flesh wafting into my lungs as I stood over the body. Flicking the blood off the blade, I turned to face the remaining three bandits.
Damn it!
I heard the elf swear as he began conjuring another ball of fire in his hands.
You're making the biggest fucking mistake! You hear me, you little freak!
The dwarf spat venomously.
Even if you manage to beat us, you're still trapped in the middle of our raid all by yourself. Your best bet is to surrender now and pray we kill you quickly.
I cocked my head, letting the dwarf's words wash over me. What makes you think I'm alone? The words hung in the air, taking a few seconds for the bandits to fully absorb. I could see their faces shift as they realized the echoes of combat raging around us had changed. Screaming voices and shouting had been replaced by the sound of running feet. Sharp thunderclaps of magical explosions could be heard in the distance.
Filion!
A loud shout echoed from behind the bandits as a second band of gray-armored marauders ran towards the dwarf, a bloodied half-elf in the lead.
We're under attack by another group!
What's happening?
The dwarf shouted, not daring to take his eyes off me.
I don't know! They just hit us out of nowhere!
The half-elf motioned for the group to follow him.
We need to regroup and counterattack! I don't know what happened to our camp, but everyone who dies is respawning in Iberia or Coldscar!
That would have been us, I called out, savoring the look of surprise on the bandits' faces. We were hoping to come by, maybe borrow a cup of sugar, while introducing ourselves as friendly neighbors. Imagine how upset we were when we found the remains of half a dozen caravans in your tiny little grotto.
You destroyed our camp?
The dwarf replied in disbelief, shock visibly running through his body as he took a step backwards. And spent nearly half the night running and trying to catch up to y'all. I let my gaze slide off the dwarf, looking at the half-elf and the other bandits expectantly. In case you were wondering, this is the part where you all surrender.
Surrender?
The half-elf said with disbelief.
You're outnumbered 10-1 and you expect us to surrender?
Yeah, and quickly, please, if you don't mind. I motioned to the battle raging distantly around us. I have places to be, people to save. My schedule's pretty packed this morning.
Filth! Who the fuck is this clown?
The half-elf grunted.
What the hell is going on with his face and eyes?
I don't know, Rock,
the dwarf replied, regaining some of his courage now that more of his allies had arrived.
He just appeared out of nowhere and killed Rajan, Welton, and Orson without breaking a sweat.
Are you fucking serious?
The half-elf exclaimed with surprise, his eyes narrowing as he looked at me.
You let this anorexic little shit kill half your party?
Can we get on with the surrendering portion of this conversation? I called out in the best bored tone I could muster, despite inwardly seething as they spoke about my appearance.
I really do have places to be today.
I don't think you understand the situation you're in.
The half-elf started moving towards me, waving a metal rod in his hand.
You attacked the Grey Devils. You're about as fucked as a person can get. By the time lunch rolls around, we'll be setting up our new camp in whatever place you call home.
Somehow I doubt that, I replied, watching the half-elf continue stalking forward, his retinue not far behind. I held up a hand, motioning for the group to stop. Last chance before things get violent. I paused, looking down at the bodies belonging to the half-orc shaman and human rogue, who had since expired from blood loss. Well, more violent. Unfazed by my threats, the half-elf didn't break his stride as he moved menacingly towards me.
Enough! Let's get this over with!
I was hoping you'd say that. Before I'd even finished speaking, a massive azure blur sailed over the top of my head and slammed into the advancing half-elf, sending him to the ground.
You talk far too much when there is killing to be done.
A mental voice rang in my head.
What the hell is that?
One of the bandits yelled in surprise, watching the ether-warped puma begin to savage the fallen half-elf.
Oh, shit, Rock!
A thunderclap of magic cut the bandit off as a burst of mage fire exploded through the gathered group of marauders, sending them all sprawling off balance. A second later, a large fireball flew through the air and detonated itself against the side of the elven mage. The blast sent the poor bandit flying, landing with a sickening crunch as his armor caught fire. But before the stunned mage could even register what had happened, a black arrow thudded into the side of his chest, followed by two more seconds later.
Lear!
I heard a familiar voice boom over the twin magic bursts, spotting Drace's massive form as he sprinted towards the raiders.
Hit 'em from both sides!
Leaping forward at Drace's order, I circled around my familiar as his teeth finally closed on the half-elf's head, ending all resistance with a vicious twist of the neck. Focusing on the now terrified dwarf warrior, I threw a flare at his face as I closed the distance. Reacting instinctively, the dwarf brought up his shield to protect his face, the tiny fireball splashing harmlessly against the wood. Capitalizing on the dwarf's momentary blindness, I triggered Blinkstep once more, this time appearing directly on his unprotected flank. With all my strength and simmering anger behind the attack, I stabbed Razor deep into the dwarf's side, feeling the blade slip past his ribs and bite deep into his flesh. Roaring in pain, the dwarf tore himself free of my sword, his axe swinging wildly as he tried to buy himself space, forcing me to backpedal to evade his crazed, rage-filled attacks. Howling like a wild animal, the dwarf launched himself at me, seeking to overwhelm my defenses with wild and punishing attacks. No longer able to baffle the warrior with creative maneuvers, I was forced to stand toe-to-toe and found myself almost hard-pressed to keep up. For whatever he lacked in tactical sense, the berserk dwarf made up for it in sheer ferocity and endurance, as I worked to dodge and evade his attacks, unwilling to risk directly parrying an attack. Shit! I winced, feeling my arm go numb reflexively, deflecting a particularly inspired attack, and I felt my balance stagger under the powerful blow as my feet slid across the ground.
That rage ability is powerful!
Need help, Lear?
Constantine's voice reached my ears the same moment his short sword buried itself deep into the dwarf's kidney. The warrior let out a high-pitched gasp of pain before falling lifelessly to the ground as Constantine followed up his first attack with an even more devastating stab to the back of the head.
I had him!
I called to the rogue, both of us turning to move towards the remaining bandits.
You mean before the sun comes up?
Constantine grunted dismissively as he fell in beside me.
You were taking too long.
I already killed three of them before you got here,
I challenged, catching a bandit's blade on my sword and forcing it high, allowing Constantine the opportunity to disembowel the man.
Congrats! Do you want a shiny sticker?
He shot back at me while stepping forward and shouldering the now bleeding bandit to the ground.
Oh, I know where I'll put a sticker, all right,
I replied while stabbing the fallen bandit in the chest.
Is it my butt?
Constantine queried, darting forward to stab a bandit fighting Drace from behind.
Are you two at it already?
Drace shouted, interrupting our banter as his sword bit deep into the collar of the bandit.
How do you even have the energy? We've literally been running all night!
I lugged off and took a nap. Couldn't you tell?
Constantine replied, stabbing the bandit a second time.
I feel great!
Are you serious?
I thrust a shocking-touch charged razor into the shoulder of the last standing bandit, the others having long since been felled by a volley of magic and arrows.
That depends,
Constantine shot back, trapping the stunned bandit's weapon, allowing Drace the time to wind up and cleave into his skull.
How angry will you be if I say yes?
I grunted at the rogue in mock frustration, watching the last bandit fall to the ground as Drace pulled his weapon free.
We've got them on the run,
Sierra called out, trotting over to me while carefully scanning our surroundings.
I'm taking a few of the scouts to see if we can cut them off before they make it into the woods. Constantine, Amaranth, let's go.
On it,
Constantine replied, throwing me a mock salute as he started to move.
Catch you guys later.
Amaranth cooed in acknowledgement, the familiar's tongue flicking out as it licked the bloody mess covering its maw.
You got this, Lear?
Drace asked me, motioning to the people still cowering under the nearby carts.
We're gonna see if anyone else needs help.
Yeah, I should be fine,
I waved at the warrior, watching him spin on his heels and run off with a nod, taking Caius and Halcyon with him. I turned towards the cart where I'd seen the cowering travelers, expecting them to recoil from my appearance. To my surprise, however, none looked away from my face, all watching me intently as hope bloomed in their eyes. "Don't worry," I spoke softly. "You're safe now. Virtus is here." Chapter 2. Aldford. I felt the wagon lurch as it rolled over a rough patch of ground, waking me from a light, if fitful, sleep. Opening my eyes, I saw that we had finally begun the final approach towards Aldford. The morning sun had risen into the sky and banished the twin moons of the night. Blinking myself awake, my mind drifted back to the aftermath of the battle, vaguely recalling Sierra's report that every single Grey Devil bandit they could find had been either captured or killed, followed by Caius's excited discovery that the caravan we had just rescued was in fact the second wave of settlers that we had been expecting for the last 2 weeks. My memories of the morning blurred into a jumble of new faces as we reorganized the caravan, tending to the wounded and sorting out the dead. The last thing I remembered after the caravan started moving was hopping into the lead wagon of the rescued caravan and promptly falling asleep, exhausted. Loosening the fur cloak I pulled around myself, I brought up a gloved hand to rub my face, grimacing when my fingers touched hard cheekbones, an instant reminder of my now not-so-new condition. "Damn ether warping," I thought, turning my grimace into a scowl as I attempted to shift myself into a more comfortable position. Although a month had passed since my body had been warped under the twin influences of the annulment sphere and the raw ether that slave King Abdiel had used to manifest his physical presence in the world, I was still having a hard time adjusting to the physical changes that had altered my body. Resembling nothing like the body I'd first designed in character creation all those weeks ago, it was now withered and gaunt, bereft of any excess fat or muscle. My now beardless face had a slightly feral look to it, the scars that Amaranth had inflicted on me while he was my nemesis having stretched wide across the side of my head and jaw, the result giving me a rather ghoulish appearance that couldn't help but make me feel self-conscious every time someone flinched when meeting my eyes. Despite the changes to my form, I considered myself lucky the transformation hadn't affected my raw strength, and I had to only make minor adjustments to my fighting style to compensate for my leaner and lighter stature. For what I lost in mass and being able to throw my weight around, I gained in being almost impossible to keep hold of being able to, quite literally, punch above my weight class. I sighed, looking up at Aldford in the distance. "At least we're back at the village now."
"Is that a tree?"
The driver sitting beside me exclaimed, his voice full of awe, having long since gotten used to my presence.
"Wait, is it really glowing, or have my eyes gone and cracked?"
"Hmm?" The driver's excitement snapped me out of my thoughts, and I looked up to see the now massive ether-warped oak tree hanging high over Aldford. "Your eyes aren't lying to you. We really do have a magic tree growing in the heart of the village."
"A magic tree?"
The driver echoed in disbelief while turning to glance at me.
"How?"
"A gigantic magic-infused spider attacked the village one night, not too long ago, and on its death it erupted into a large puddle of glowing ichor," I explained, my expression completely deadpan as I watched the teamster's eyes grow wider and wider with every word I spoke. "We had no easy way of cleaning up the mess, so we buried it and tossed an acorn down. By the time the morning rolled around, the tree had sprouted nearly a dozen feet." The driver's mouth hung open for a moment before he shook his head and laughed nervously.
"You're having a laugh at me, aren't you?"
"Not at all," I replied. "Ask any of the villagers, and they'll tell you the same."
"Ah."
The man looked at me, trying to gauge how serious I was. After a moment, he let out a strangled cough and turned his attention forward, shaking his head.
"First bandits, now giant spiders and a magic tree. Should have stayed on the farm."
I couldn't help but smile slightly at the teamster's reaction as I turned my attention towards Aldford, spotting a large crowd waiting for us just outside of the village. We had sent word ahead with a pair of eager scouts to explain the night's and morning's events to the Bon, as well as give Aldford enough time to prepare to receive a little over 200 more souls. The wagon slowly ground to a halt as a pair of adventurers and a handful of villagers began organizing the incoming vehicles into neat lines, where they would not impede progress, while still allowing for the quick unloading of the countless goods the settlers had brought with them. While the wagons and carts were being secured, the new arrivals traveling on foot were greeted enthusiastically by dozens of waiting villagers and adventurers, quickly finding themselves overwhelmed by the rushing wave of hospitality as their long journey finally came to an end. I bid a quick farewell to the driver as he moved to check on the horse pulling the cart, leaping down from the vehicle, happy for the opportunity to stretch and readjust my armor.
"We're finally back."
Sierra's tired voice filtered into my ears as she walked between the wagons towards me, Amaranth following close on her heels.
"It's barely noon and it already feels like it's been a long day. I really need to go take a nap.
I caught a few hours of sleep while we were traveling," I replied empathetically, taking my gloves off so I could run my hands through Amaranth's fur, the giant cat immediately moving to rub his face on my hip. "Hopefully that'll be enough to get me through the day."
"Are you sure, Lear?"
Sierra asked, pulling off her helmet and running a hand through her bright crimson hair.
"You and Constantine have that meeting with the stream producers to go to in the afternoon today."
"Yeah, I'll be okay." I shrugged at Sierra before looking back down at Amaranth, who had closed his eyes in bliss once I began scratching his ears. I managed to get a couple hours before everything started this morning, and I'll likely crash into bed early tonight. After looking into my eyes for a moment, Sierra eventually nodded her approval, satisfied with what she saw.
"All right. Just don't burn yourself out."
"If you rested more often throughout the day, such as I do, perhaps you would not be so weary when rival predators reveal themselves."
Amaranth's cool mental voice filtered through my head as he opened a single azure-colored eye to look at me. I couldn't help but snort at the cat's logic. "Is that what you call sleeping around all day?"
"Bold words for someone so tasty."
Amaranth chided me as he quickly moved his head, gently nipping at my hand. "Hey!" I yelped as I instinctively pulled my hand free from my familiar's mouth.
"Sassy cat?"
Sierra asked, eyebrow raised. "Sassy cat," I confirmed, scowling at my wet hand. "He needs to spend less time with Constantine. He's picking up bad habits." Sierra couldn't help but laugh. "Remember that time he brought you that giant snake?"
"You mean that one he didn't actually kill?"
I looked at Amaranth sternly.
"And let wrap itself around my leg while I was still asleep and in bed?"
"I hadn't seen you eat in days."
The puma let out a frustrated croak.
"You are wasting away before my eyes. I had thought you forgot how to hunt."
"Lyrian!"
A stern voice cut short any reply I could give my familiar, causing me to turn in its direction. Searching through the milling group of settlers, I saw Alduin beckoning me towards him.
"Better go report, Lear,"
Sierra said with a smile. "I'm gonna go help the new adventurers settle in and figure out what they need. See you in a bit." "All right." I waved goodbye to the scout as I turned to walk towards a bewildered Alduin looking out at the arriving wave of settlers. Amaranth led the way, with me following close behind, the giant cat's presence and my intimidating appearance allowing the two of us to easily cut through the crowd.
"Lyrian!"
The knight looked at me incredulously, completely at a loss for words.
"I know you sent word ahead, but... I'd rather hear it again straight from your mouth."
"Well, as you can see, we haven't been abandoned," I told the Bon, watching a wave of relief wash through the older man.
"But I haven't had a chance to talk with the settlers yet, so I have no idea what has happened in Iberia over the last month." Alduin gave me a grim nod.
"Do you think this was just simple banditry?"
"Adventurers rarely make anything simple," I replied, shaking my head as my mind went back to the events of the previous night. "But from what we could tell, their motivation was purely greed."
"Tell me what happened after you left," Alduin said, struggling to keep his voice even,
All I remember was a flurry of shouting when Bax returned. Then you all practically sprinted out of the village as if hell itself was chasing after you.
I didn't feel like Bax's report could wait, I began to explain, referring to the surviving scoutmaster of the ill-fated Iberian Mages Guild expedition we had rescued a month ago. We had him and a handful of others scouting out the southeastern approach towards Aldford to see if there was any reason why we hadn't seen anyone out this way over the last few weeks. From the little we've learned so far, a fairly large group of adventurers split off from Coldscar and were preying on anyone making their way towards Aldford or further north into the fens. I paused to take a breath. They found themselves a grotto that was practically impossible to spot from a distance, unless you happened to know that it was there, and set up a camp. From there, it seems they raided more than a dozen caravans coming our way, cutting us off from the rest of the world.
Gods!
Baldwin cursed, clenching his fists in rage.
Please tell me you put an end to them. All of them.
We did, I replied softly, but not at their camp.
Oh?
We missed the bandits by an hour.
Missed them?
The Bond looked at me with a confused expression.
What do you mean?
They went out raiding, I replied with a sigh, only leaving a handful behind to watch over their hideout.
Then they must have known the settlers were coming,
Alduin stated, turning to gaze at all of the new arrivals. I could see his eyes searching through the crowd, pausing when they landed on blood-stained clothes and damaged vehicles. We took their camp and captured those left behind easily enough. Its strength was better suited to not being found rather than being a defensible location. I nodded as I continued my explanation. We think they've been there at least 3 weeks. We found a rather substantial stash of goods that they've looted. Alduin closed his eyes momentarily as he absorbed the information.
Were there any survivors?
From their earlier raids? I queried before shaking my head sadly. No, at least none that we could find.
Damn.
Alduin let out a deep sigh before motioning for me to continue. We didn't linger for too long at the bandit camp once we realized that their main force had moved out. The little information we were able to get out of the captured bandits was that they had left to intercept a huge caravan on the way here. I motioned to the settlers behind me. The bandits had quite a bit of a head start on us, but left a trail that even a blind man could follow. We were lucky that the moons were out today, too, I added. It gave us enough light to move at a fast pace and make up for lost time. We managed to find them only a few minutes after the attack had started. Alduin fell silent, looking over the nervous settlers as they slowly began to unwind from their journey. There was a hesitant motion to their actions as they tried to come to grips with their brutal introduction to frontier life. They were quickly realizing that the only safety they would find here would be in the strength of their arms and from the friends standing beside them.
How many casualties were there?
Alduin asked hesitantly. 10 amongst all the caravan guards and 8 settlers. I replied, remembering the dead. Plus at least 9 adventurers. But we can't be completely sure in their case.
And the bandits?
Alduin's voice took on a hard tone. At least 90. I couldn't help but reply cheerfully. We also managed to take a few prisoners as well. I nodded towards the wagons. I have the guild watching them for the time being.
Which I will have to request that you remand into my custody.
An unfamiliar voice spoke over my shoulder, startling me with how close it was behind me.
Where did he come from?
Amaranth let out a startled hiss as he twisted to look at something behind me. Turning around, I found myself staring into a featureless gray helmet that completely obscured the upper half of the speaker's face. Flinching involuntarily, I took a step backward, creating space between me and the tall, armor-clad man. Any reply I had died in my throat as I realized the man's armor was full plate, and that he had just snuck up on both Amaranth and I while wearing it.
I don't know,
I sent back to the cat, swallowing hard as I noticed dry bloodstains streaked along the man's hands and chest, marring the otherwise immaculate gray-tinted armor. The man stood formally, hands clasped in front of him, presumably staring directly at me, though with no visor or eye sockets in the helmet, it was impossible to tell. How does he even see? My mind had frozen itself at the man's mysterious stare, leaving my mouth hanging open. Fortunately for me, Alduin's tongue didn't suffer the same sort of paralysis that had gripped mine. He saluted the man standing before us.
Justicar, you honor us with your presence.
It is you who honor me, Sir Alduin.
The man spoke, shifting to bow slightly before the knight, then turning to do the same towards Amaranth and me.
I am Justicar Joseph Dyer, and I have been called to enforce the rule of law in Aldford. My apologies for startling you two with my arrival.
We are to receive a Justicar?
Alduin's eyes immediately widened on hearing the man's words.
So soon? I had thought it would be years before the gods graced us with one of your order, if ever.
I do not presume to know the gods' plans.
The Justicar spoke with a neutral tone.
I only live to serve.
He does not smell.
Amaranth's voice filtered through my mind as he coiled his body around my legs, watching the Justicar carefully.
I smell blood, leather, and metal on him, but no skin or sweat.
I cleared my throat, my brain finally having had a chance to catch up with the conversation. What exactly is a Justicar? Alduin looked at me incredulously.
You have never heard of a Justicar?
I really haven't, I replied while looking over Dyer's armor. I'm pretty sure I would have remembered seeing such unique armor.
The Justicars are a sect of warrior monks and paladins that hold a special place within Iberian society.
Alduin spoke with a tone bordering on reverence.
Without them, we would have surely torn ourselves apart shortly after arriving on this continent.
We are but servants of Mithus, the god of law.
I felt Dyer's featureless gaze shift onto me.
We enforce the laws of the land where we are posted and maintain acceptable order as decreed in the local writ or charter.
Completely neutral in all regard, the Justicars have served as an incorruptible force within Iberia, and have been experts in all matters of law for decades.
Alduin continued.
Their numbers have never been great, but their tenacity and ability has long outweighed that. To have one sent to Aldford so soon, it is an honor beyond measure.
I had no idea. I turned to look at Dyer, who seemed to be unaffected by Alduin's praise. What exactly would your role be within Aldford?
Since I am the only Justicar here, I would likely fill a variety of roles wherever my services are needed. I am able to adjudicate legal disputes and form contracts, in addition to everyday peacekeeping duties. If our journey was any indication of what to expect from frontier life, I also expect to devote a large portion of my time to keeping adventurers in check.
Something we find ourselves in dire need of,
Alduin commented bitterly, casting a glance at me.
While Lyrian and his friends have been a great boon to our settlement, others have not.
So I saw this morning.
Dyer inclined his head ever so slightly in agreement while indicating the blood on his armor.
If you would present the town's charter before me so that I could place my seal upon it, I can begin my duties immediately.
Certainly,
Alduin replied, reaching into a pouch tied to his belt.
I have it right here.
Hang on, I said with a frown. What do you mean, keep adventurers in check?
Since the appearance of so many adventurers over the last month, Mithus has decreed that all Justicars are to ensure that adventurers do not take advantage of their immortality and harm those who were not blessed with the same gift.
The Justicar replied patiently.
And to punish those who do so.
Punish them how exactly?
Depending on the scope of their crimes, a monetary fine may suffice in some cases, while others may warrant execution and their subsequent imprisonment for a set time.
You can change where an adventurer returns to life? I asked, a hint of concern creeping into my voice as I pieced together the hidden meaning to the Justicar's words.
I personally cannot, but should Mithus deem it necessary to punish an adventurer with imprisonment, He can direct the adventurer's soul wherever he deems necessary,
Dyer stated crisply.
Be assured that if you follow the laws set forth in the town charter, then there is nothing to be concerned about. My duty is to ensure that all remains safe within the town limits.
I see, I said, slowly mulling over the Justicar's response in my head. It seems to me that Justicars are a Send Online's version of police and rule enforcement, I thought, watching Dyer touch a corner of Aldford's charter, causing a small symbol to appear on the paper. Much like how high-leveled town guards used to be in other multiplayer games, to keep players from griefing other players or simply killing everyone in a city.
It is done, Dyer said to Aldwyn. Aldford is now under Mithus's watchful eye.
Thank you, Justicar,
the knight replied earnestly, placing the town charter back into his pouch.
Your arrival could not come at a better time.
Dyer silently nodded his thanks to the bond before turning to look at me.
I would take custody of those prisoners now. It is past time that they answer for their crimes.
I looked towards Aldwyn, seeing him give me a gentle nod.
Lyrian, you and Virtus have done more than I could ever have asked to keep the peace in Aldford. These bandits fall under the Justicar's responsibility now. You may release them to any fate he deems fit.
Well, I'm definitely happy to have less work on my plate for a change, I replied, a little taken aback at how fast the Justicar had inserted himself into the town, but if Aldwyn trusted him, I was willing to do the same. I motioned for the Justicar to follow me. I'll take you to the prisoners right away. The Justicar nodded silently, turning to follow me as we walked back towards the crowd of settlers. To better keep the prisoners contained and protected from the settlers' wrath, we had decided to keep them together in a spare wagon under strict guard. What are you going to do with the prisoners? I asked, curious to hear of Dyer's plans. So far, he hadn't asked if Aldford had a prison or given any sort of hint to what his intentions were.
I am going to sentence them.
Dyer's voice was completely flat as he spoke. To what, exactly?
They have been caught in the act of banditry,
Dyer replied.
There's only one sentence available to them.
The Justicar paused for a split second.
Death.
Chapter 3.
Welcome to Aldford. Please grab a rope and pull.
Halcyon muttered while all of us, minus Amaranth, looked at the six hanging bandits that Dyer had just unceremoniously hung from a tree just outside of the town. And seeing the hanging bodies, the cat had commented that he was getting particularly hungry and excused himself to hunt for his meal. None of us dared to argue.
What else could he have done?
Caius asked with a slow shake of his head.
Each one of them were beyond guilty. They deserved to hang.
No disagreement here,
Halcyon replied with a sigh.
I just expected something different.
Like what? Cheerleaders?
Caius snorted.
Or maybe snacks in a parade?
Well, I don't know.
Halcyon's eyes were unfocused while he looked at the hanging bandits.
A trial? Dyer just grabbed a handful of the caravan guards, gave them each a rope, and strung up the bandits with barely a second thought.
I don't think a trial would have done anything other than waste time, I said, casting a glance to the Justicar, who was standing beside Aldwyn a short distance away. You saw the blood on Dyer's armor. He was there when the bandits attacked the settlers. There was no doubt of guilt.
I guess, Halcyon admitted. It just caught me a bit off guard how fast it all happened.
I think it was a warning to all of the adventurers,
Sierra quietly added, speaking up for the first time since the bandits were executed.
Until now, it's been up to us to enforce the rules. And thankfully, we haven't had to really do that, barring the whole thing with Graves last month. By hanging the bandits right in front of everyone, Dyer's shown that there'll be game-enforced penalties if they take advantage of people.
Yeah, Constantine agreed. We've been pretty lucky so far with the adventurers that joined us after Graves dragged them here.
All we've had are growing pains, or minor disagreements.
How many adventurers do we have in the new arrivals?
Trace asked, looking towards Constantine and Sierra. 78, Constantine answered, though a handful have already told me that they're only looking to pass through Oldford and head further north to start their own settlement.
Hmm. I wish them luck with that. They'll definitely have enough work cut out for themselves.
Trace grunted in amusement, then nodded towards the massive group of settlers.
What about the settlers? Are they all here to join Oldford, or moving on too?
I haven't heard any talking about leaving, Sierra replied, which means we're going to have to find places to put 111 people, not counting the 30 guards that survived the attack. There was a quiet pause as we digested those numbers.
So, counting the adventurers, we're looking at nearly tripling the number of people we have in the village.
Again, I said, realizing that Oldford would be boasting nearly 300 inhabitants, depending on how many adventurers chose to stay with us.
Oldford's come a long way from being a little frontier village, Constantine commented wistfully. I guess it's definitely a town now.
I nodded in agreement with Constantine, turning to look at all the settlers and adventurers who had paused to watch the execution of the bandits, feeling a little overwhelmed at just how many people were here now. In not even a day, we had gone from being completely cut off and alone on the frontier, without a single new arrival to Oldford since Graves showed up on our doorstep, to scrambling and trying to somehow accommodate 200 more souls.
Damn bandits. If we'd known so many were coming, we could have done more to prepare for all of them.
Trace said, reading my mind as he gave one last look at the hanging adventurers.
Let's get back to Oldford. We should give Leandra a heads up before everyone starts trying to cram themselves into the town and realizes that we have no place to put them.
We have to go soon too, Lear,
Constantine reminded me as we began to walk towards the town.
Our meeting's at 3, and it's probably a good idea to be there early.
Yeah, you're right, I replied with a nod. I just need to set up my offline tasks after we talk with Leandra.
Right, Constantine agreed. I have a ton of leather I've been meaning to clean, and I have ready for crafting. I've ignored crafting for far too long.
I'll probably take my rest day tonight, too, I added after doing the mental math and realizing I'd already been logged in for 9 straight days. Something tells me we might need the extra days once we get everyone settled in.
That's probably not a bad idea, Sierra said slowly, rubbing her eyes. I, for one, want to sleep at least a solid 12 hours.
The party chorused their agreement, exhaustion visible on everyone's expression. It had been a long and busy night, with little sleep to go around. As we walked towards the town, I found my mind focusing on the new settlers. I couldn't believe how much had changed in Oldford since launch day, well over a month ago, where I'd found myself separated from the group and dropped completely naked into a veritable horde of goblins. Oldford's come a long way since then, I thought as I looked up at a new building flanking the town's southeastern entrance. Situated just behind the earthworks stood the first of Oldford's 2 watchtowers, which in its current semi-finished state measured 25 feet tall from ground to roof. At the moment, the watchtower was essentially a 4-posted scaffold, with a set of stairs twisting upwards to a semi-covered platform, where the militia or other adventurers could easily watch the horizon for threats, while also enjoying some level of protection from the worst of the elements. One of our long-term plans was to build a sister tower to match the watchtower on the southern entrance in order to maximize our visibility across the horizon and to better control access into the heart of Oldford. Should the need ever arise, the 2 watchtowers would be perfectly positioned to rain death and destruction on any who chose to assault the town from the southeastern bridge. The same applied for the northern entrance to Oldford, where a matching watchtower also stood, giving us a clear view of the land to the north of the town and any who would approach from the direction of the northeastern forest. In time, we hoped to finish both sets of watchtowers guarding the 2 entrances to Oldford, which would then serve as a starting point to begin building the palisade I'd originally envisioned circling around the town. That is, if I can ever get Jenkins, Leandra, and Drace to agree on a proper design for the finished defenses. I shook my head, remembering the rather heated disagreements the trio had found themselves in over the last few weeks. Channeling his expertise from his real-life career being a civilian planner, Drace had quickly become integral to the development of Oldford, happy to have a way to put his education to practical use, something that he'd been unable to do in reality with a massive downturn in employment. Walking over the bridge and into the town proper, three large buildings came into view. Set in a row, side by side to one another, were three Viking-style longhouses, all bearing noticeable architectural differences, despite each serving the same function. We had learned early that Leandra viewed using the same design for more than one building something akin to a mortal sin, and so we eventually found it easier to give in to his eccentricities, so long as it didn't impact the building's production time or the town's defense. We'll probably need to build a few more of these, I thought, silently admiring the Toolshar's handiwork and the way that he had managed to have the three different designs blend seamlessly together. On second thought, we need to build more of everything. I haven't the faintest idea where we're going to find enough space to put everyone. I hope they're okay sleeping outside for a few more days. Leaving the longhouses behind, we cut through what was shaping up to be the residential section of Oldford and approached what once used to be the workshop, now creatively renamed the Crafting Hall, after our countless renovations had drastically changed the single-room building into a sprawling, multi-purpose crafting hub. It had taken a fair bit of arm-twisting and cajoling to convince Jenkins to allow us to modify his treasured workshop. But as more adventurers expressed interest in pursuing trade skills and the demand for construction materials rose, he was forced to admit that the tiny little workshop wasn't enough to fulfill all of Oldford's needs anymore. Well, that, and we told Sheila that he was being an obstinate fool about the whole thing. So, with a hesitant Jenkins' ever-vigilant supervision and Leandra's expertise, the workshop had been drastically expanded into a massive two-story building with dedicated crafting areas set aside for leatherworking, tailoring, and carpentry. Due to its unique requirements, we had decided to move the original forge into its own adjacent and still-in-progress building that we had come to call the Foundry. Process on the new crafting hub for the town had advanced far enough that adventurers were no longer tripping over one another as they worked. But as with practically everything in Oldford, we still had a long way to go until the crafting hall was considered complete.
Ah, our intrepid defenders return.
A silky smooth voice pulled me out of my thoughts as a tan-colored Toolshar, wearing a simple leather tunic with dark pants, walked out of the crafting hall.
You wake a tired old man with such a large ruckus in the night, and now I sense you are all here to bring him even more work, yes?
Leandra, I smiled, while looking up to see the familiar lion-like form of Aldford's lead architect striding towards us. You know what they say about the reward for doing a good job.
But of course, more work,
the Catman exclaimed with a laugh, causing the numerous tools he had looped along his waist to jingle.
That is how the world works for people such as us. We are destined to be forever busy.
Revealing a mouth full of sharp teeth, the architect grinned at us in anticipation as he clasped his hands together.
Now, tell poor Leandra what tasks you wish to pile on him, and he will tell you what he can do.
Trace took a deep breath before starting to explain the events of the night, culminating with our battle against the bandits.
Now we need to find a way to house at least 220 people, at least for the short term until we can build a few more buildings.
A daunting task.
Leandra replied, crossing his arms in thought for a few seconds before snapping his fingers with a nod.
For anyone other than myself.
You came up with a plan already? I couldn't help but stammer in surprise. Despite having spent nearly a month working with the older architect-turned-gamer, I was often caught off guard by how the man thought and his creative approach to problems.
Of course,
Leandra waved dismissively.
For most of my life, I have traveled all over the world, volunteering with disaster relief organizations during crises. On several occasions, I have had to do much more, with much less than we find ourselves with today.
The architect paused, his expression falling for a second as his ears drooped, before springing up as he shook his head.
But that is all in the past, and we must worry about what we can do today.
Before any of us could comment on the ghost that we'd seen cross Leandra's face, he launched into explaining his plan, already having moved past whatever memory had haunted him.
We will take the entirety of that god-awful burlap cloth, piling up in the storage room, and fashion it into a top. From there, we will use a few of the timbers we have set aside to dry as supports, and we will make ourselves a massive tent.
A tent?
Drace repeated slowly before a spark caught in his eye.
A tent! You mean like a circus tent? That's a great idea. It'll be perfect for the short term.
Thank you, my friends.
Tulshar purred with another toothy smile as we all echoed Drace's enthusiasm.
There will be some work involved to create the needed bracing, fastenings, and rope, but I am confident that with some help I can complete the task by nightfall. If need be, we will conscript others for any additional labor we may need. Where do you wish this tent to be placed?
Just outside the town to the north, I replied, mentally trying to envision the size of the tent. I don't want it blocking our view towards the south, and the rivers will provide enough of a defense to keep any creatures away.
You want to put them outside the northern defenses?
Halcyon asked.
Won't they see that as a snub that we don't trust them?
I don't see that we have any other choice, I said, shrugging at the mage. If we put the tent up within Oldford, they'll be right on top of where we're going to be building their new homes anyway.
Lear's right, Drace agreed. The fewer people we have underfoot, the better. If anyone has hurt feelings, tell them to grab a hammer or an axe and help out. We won't turn them away.
That is for certain.
A pair of loud, nervous whinnies interrupted Leandra as a cart pulled by two large draft horses rumbled into view, a familiar-looking shape pulling on the reins to stop the moment he saw us. Keeping pace beside the cart on foot were the two largest thunder lizards, Helix and Abaddon, their eyes eagerly scanning the nearby area for threats. Perched on top of the cart, I saw a terrified, white-haired man being practically crushed into his seat as both Mir and Zethys covered him from either side. A coal-black dwarf held the reins, grinning maniacally while waving towards us with a free hand.
Thorn!
Sierra called out in concern, all of us instantly on high alert with the sudden arrival of the cart.
What's going on? What are you doing to that man? Where are Freya and Thea?
We're protecting him! Thorn called back to us. Freya and Thea are sorting out all the new adventurers. When we found out what was in this cart, we had to get him to safety. Is the cart full of bullion?
Constantine snorted while shaking his head.
What the hell does he have in there?
Before Thorn could reply, the middle-aged man pushed himself free from both Zethys and Mir towards us.
Please, I'm just an alchemist. I don't even know what's happening. They took one look at my cart, then practically commandeered it. I have done nothing wrong.
Thorn, you kidnapped an alchemist?
Halcyon asked, his voice suddenly filling with worry.
Hang on. That cart isn't packed with naphtha or some other crazy shit that could explode at the drop of a hat, is it?
No!
The alchemist called out.
Nothing like that. I just have a pair of alembics and...
The older man's words suddenly cut off as Mir covered his mouth with a hand, growling at him loud enough for us to hear.
Shh! Don't shout that to the world. Are you insane?
I couldn't let word get out, Thorn replied. If everyone knew what he had, we'd probably have a riot on our hands within an hour.
You still haven't told us what he has, Thorn.
Halcyon started to back away from the cart nervously.
Nothing that can explode,
the dwarf answered quickly, holding up his hands placatingly while carefully looking around for other people. Seeing no one else nearby, he then waved us in close to the cart and began speaking very softly.
There's enough equipment, alembics, boiling pots, and anything else you could possibly need in here to set up a fully functioning alchemy laboratory.
That's what I told him,
the man exclaimed, having been freed from Mir's grasp.
Then he abducted me!
That's it? Caius asked, his voice filled with disbelief. It's not illegal to run an alchemy lab.
I don't care about the alchemy lab, Thorn replied. What I care about is that all that equipment can be used to set up a brewery and a distillery.
There was a pause as we all absorbed that, each of us looking at Thorn blankly before the implication set in.
Gods! If the other adventurers find out?
Trace shook his head.
It would be chaos.
Leandra agreed.
Find out what?
The older man demanded.
I don't understand. Why would that matter?
With your equipment, you're the first person in this town capable of producing spirits or any other kind of alcohol.
Caius whispered.
What?
The man's eyes went wide.
You mean this town is dry?
Dry is a $3 whore.
Hey!
Halcyon yelped as Caius swatted him on the arm.
What was that for?
You know exactly what it was for.
Caius rolled his eyes sarcastically at the mage before looking back at the alchemist. Aldford hasn't seen a drop of alcohol since it was founded.
Then you truly have saved me.
The man ran a hand through his hair while sighing loudly.
My name is Marlin Carey. I journeyed here with the intention of setting up my own laboratory.